You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, or surround some fish. Either way, I tell you what you're going to learn about today. It's kind of cool. Many of you know that in years past, I was involved in the commercial fishery. And one of the things that I did was catch a coolie. Not enough of them. Otherwise, I'd be retired these days. But enough of them to certainly to make a living for me and for a bunch of people that were around us. And one of the things that became increasingly obvious to me is that, is this inexhaustible? I mean, we've been having such great success with these fish for so long. Are we ever going to fish them out? And there have been times when there's been, you know, hardly any Akuli. And there have been times when there's been, like, a lot. Well, there is a project called the Akuli Project. There was a pilot done a little while ago, and now there's another one done. It's a year long, and it's part of the auspices of the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. To that effect, we've got John Wiley with us today. John is a student at HPU and is really in an interesting position because he's a young guy, and he's going to be doing something that a lot of us are going to be hinging on what the results of those. And so in my over 50 years in the business, that's one of the longest introductions I've done, John. welcome to the program. Nice to see you.
Well, thank you very much.
Where do you come from?
I'm born and raised in California,
San Francisco Bay Area. So cold water.
Yeah.
So really cool water.
Very cool.
You know, there are a lot of similarities and a lot of differences. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is this little fish called Akuli. How much is it like smelt?
I mean, it's very similar to those types of fish. They're a fast-growing fish. So, I mean, after 7 months, they're already sexually mature.
Yep.
They only live for a couple of years. So.
Yeah. And aren't they providing... Aren't they maybe an unwitting part of the food chain? They're just there to be eaten by other fish.
Well, certainly a lot of fish are.
But, you know, are there as many people, and I know the answer to this already, but I think our audience needs to know this. We will put up with a lot of different hassles to eat fish, and we'll eat a lot of little tiny fish, and we'll really savor them. Is a coolie or shad or any of those other species, are they food fish in California?
It depends. Some people do. There's a lot of, especially in the Asian community, they enjoy like mackerel. They'll be on the piers all the time. I used to do a project out there. They'd be a couple buckets full of mackerel. But I mean, it's really your preference. For me, I'm not a big oily fish guy.
Yeah. So. And by the way, they're oily and a lot of us savor the oil of them. Were you surprised at the number of us when you first got here that will actually eat them raw?
Yeah. I was never a big raw fish guy before I got here, but I got to say the poke bowls. They are just good.
What was your initial interest? I mean, growing up, were you around the fishery? What got you involved or interested in this science of it?
I mean, early on, I guess it was sharks that got me into the ocean. I was just fascinated. There's a place called Marine World where I grew up.
Sure.
And it was like just a big aquarium and walked through shark tanks, just captivated me, you know?
On a side project, you know, they're looking at doing this out at the, I don't want to say Kapolei, but at Kalailoa, certainly out at Koilima, they're looking at Colina is what I'm looking at. Maybe at Atlantis coming here and doing one of those big experiences. But I think that what really is going to be of interest to this audience, and that's why we're so glad that the council called what you were doing to our attention, is that a lot of times people think that we're exhausting the supply. Before we get into are we or not, hasn't it shown that Akuli are pretty resilient and pretty fast growing?
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. There's some of those fish, just Akuli being one of them, they just pound them fishing every year and they just repopulate themselves so quickly. It's tough to really
When they
that
don't,
resource.
we really have something to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What are the differences, without getting specific? A lot of us don't know the difference between Akuli and Opelo. You know, an Opelo is a little bit different. Actually, probably a little bit more sought after as a food fish because it's not quite as bloody. What's the difference between the two, basically?
I mean, I've had more experience with Akuli, so I don't know a whole lot about the Opelo.
Okay. Well, I think that suffice to say for this, what we're talking about is the Akuli that has gone and really radically changed in price a lot over the years. A lot of our audience knows that I used to be... You know, I used to have a little of a coolie operation of my own, and I think there we were anywhere from 70 cents to $1.50 for a pound for a coolie, and I know that that's like pretty cheap a coolie.
Yeah, definitely.
What sustains the fishery? How do we know how much we can take? What is the Acoulie Project about a little bit?
So there was a initial stock assessment done in 2000 about Acoulie, mm-hmm. and basically it's a fishery dependent method. So they go out and use catch history of mm-hmm. catch and effort, and from those they use a model to estimate how the stock is doing.
Okay, and now on that method. I do know that at boat ramps, because we used to be assessed every now and again, mm-hmm. and certainly there was a time that a coolie would go through every mom and pop fish market.
Right.
And most of the time they would buy directly from a fisherman off the back of a truck. And when some people were successful and had a lot, you know, they just get on the phone and they call up. This is long before cell phones. They get up and get on the horn and say, I got a coolie. How much you want? Everybody's 50 pounds, 100 pounds, this and that. Were you surprised at the number of venues where you can actually buy the fish?
Oh yeah, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So
the method of assessment then mm-hmm. was mainly looking, I guess, at what the commercial guys were catching.
Right. It's tough. We don't have the information on the recreational side, so mm-hmm. everyone commercially is required to report. So that's what's used in the stock assessment.
Okay. Now, we learn, and we've had lots of previous segments on the program with the council on the different ways that we do these stock assessments. There's a method used in Acoulie fishing, which is a little bit unique, and your experience is going to come invaluable here, because this has been something that's been done in other areas for a long time, and that is taking a look at the fish stocks from the air. How does that work?
Right. Well, as you know, spotter pilots are really crucial in the Acoulie fishery. So they're the ones actually finding the schools mm-hmm. and guiding the fishermen to them. And also the pilot needs to be really experienced so they can tell them if it's Acoulie or Hullaloo.
Yeah, and that's the other side of the coin.
Right.
For those of you that don't know, Hullaloo is a baby Acoulie. And there's a cutoff point of how many inches?
It's about 22 centimeters.
Yeah, which so is... About
7.5 inches.
Yeah. So under 7.5 inches, it's like ahi and chibi. Up to 100 pounds, an ahi, a yellowfin tuna, is really not an ahi. It's called a chibi. But with a coolie, it's Hullaloo and a coolie. And there are seasons, and there are restrictions. We'll tell you a little bit about them. But what's the secret for the pilot to be able to tell? What have you figured it out yet? How can he tell if that's a coolie or Hullaloo? What are the differences in the way the ball or the pilot acts?
So a lot of it is just experience of the fish. They're just more, they're better able to avoid the predators. They school up more organized, if you will. And then the small ones are just kind of swimming all over the place.
Getting eaten.
Right? Yeah. And also, it's been interesting. He says it's based on kind of the space. If you can see down through the pile or the school, it's more likely the smaller fish.
I don't want people to think that it's an inexhaustible supply. But I do know in the areas where they are, you know, prolific, there is a lot of fish.
Right.
And I mean, even a plane directing the nets, the methods are still not so sophisticated that every fish gets caught. Lots of them get out.
Right, and that's kind of a misconception. You kind of think you circle up the whole school and you catch everything.
Yeah.
But that's not the case, especially with gill nets.
Yeah, and let me tell you a little story, folks. If you're a gill netter, you already know this. But if you're not, if you see a boat with all this big pile of nets like we used to do, you think, oh my goodness, these people are going to be raping the sea. You know, the bottom is not flat. And if you have a piece of gill net, say 20 feet, that's suspended over a little valley, that somehow some Acoulie tells the other Acoulie, this is how we get out of this mess. And they all go through there. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, now, but I still want to go back to the difference between the Acoulie and the Hullaloo. Because there is a, and some people don't know this, the eye size of the net is regulated to 2 3/4 inches or something like that.
2.5,
okay, now, so you can't use a net smaller than that.
Right.
If you use that net, and the fish are Hullaloo, pretty much they all go right through the net.
Right through, yep. Not getting anything. That's where the pilot is key. I mean, he has to know what you're going to be looking at. And he's also, the way we use him is what he estimates the biomass to be. So he can tell you how big that school is.
Isn't that terrific?
I mean, it's amazing.
You can give
his
credit to some of these guys.
Just incredible.
For those who don't know, what sort of aircraft are they using generally?
These are your little tiny planes. Yeah. I mean, I've been up with them a couple times, and there's not a whole lot of room up there, so...
What's it like? I mean, did you have experience spotting a fish from the sky before here?
I've never been in a plane like that. I've never been spotting from the sky. It's impressive. I can't see it unless he points it out, for the most part.
At any given time, without holding you to, you know, an exact number, around the island of Oahu, which is, I think, where the majority of akuli get caught, because that's where the market is, right? Aren't there is there a large number of areas where you can catch them?
I mean, there are. From the pilot study that we did, we found it's majority on the west side and the south side. But we were also using the pilot. They're just doing their regular fishing. So we have changed it up a little bit since then, but he was majority searching over there.
The reason he's John says that, and John Wiley, and we never really got into it. We got into your student at the HBU studying what?
Marine science.
Yeah, so
I'm
this
in the
is
master's
where,
program.
So you're in the master's program there. So at the end of the journey, there's a ticket. It's going to give you. You're going to be a doctor. A doctor of fishing. I still think that it's kind of a neat thing that people really sort of understand that, and maybe you can explain the dynamics of the pilot. The plane and the pilot, he may be fishing for different, I mean, spotting for different people.
Right.
You know, it's not all, every boat out there owns its own plane. There's sort
of
a gang.
Yeah, he definitely helps a couple. I mean, he'll go out, and for us now, he's going around the whole island every time, just so we can be certain. Even though they know where they are, we have to scientifically have them do it, you know.
On any given day, how many balls or how many piles might you find around this island?
Okay. Recently, you usually get about six. Is about average. Sometimes less, sometimes more. Yeah. It really depends.
Now, that doesn't
on,
mean there's not more.
Right. It depends on the weather. Yeah. Sometimes they don't come in school close by if there's really high surf or if it's been a lot of rain lately. The muddy water they don't really like.
Hey, I can tell you, when we were catching the fish, and those of you that are akuli guys, you have my deepest respect, because it was tough getting up early and dealing with limu and dealing with predators and dealing with all the things that you do with the net and having your own boat run over your net. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen, but that plane's pretty key.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was pretty impressive watching him guide him just on the walkie-talkie or the radio.
Explain a little bit, John, because I've never done that on this show. As an observer, let's say that there's a commercial guy down there with a boat or two. What's the conversation? What's the pitter-patter between these two guys? and how do they guide the boats around the fish?
Yeah, so I mean, the operation that I was a part of, they had two little skiffs that got off the main boat, and then they were dragging the nets around.
Right.
And so they each had a radio with the pilot, and he was guiding them skiff one or skiff two whatever.
Right,
and
he's
like, you need to go right.
The yellow boat and a red boat. The yellow boat, turn left.
Yeah.
You know, slow down. Whatever.
Yeah. And then he would just kind of say, you need to go left 100 yards, and then just guide them based like that. So every few minutes, he was giving them direction.
Were you able to observe, once the surround is done, how efficient a way it is? Even though a ton of them get away, it is amazing how much.
Oh, yeah,
they
they're
can do
splashing
it
all around.
It's
we got in there with the main boat and just kind of did donuts in the middle to scare them out into the net.
Yeah.
And then it was just shaking all over the place.
Yeah, that's what we used to do. Once the net was set, even if you had excess net in the back of the boat, you just shove it off and get it in the water so you could,
that
you know, get
sense.
In the middle and rev your motors and make that school scatter and go into your nets.
Right.
The biggest part of it was, and I'm sure you had some opportunity to check this out, is the extraction. I mean, they're all gilled.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
a
long,
that's
a lot of effort, man. They're there all night pulling fish out.
What is the purpose of the stock assessment? At this point in time, this project, you had a pilot project in 2014, and now we have a one-year project. Who funds it, and what's the project about?
Well, I mean, the project is about just understanding. It's a pretty relatively new method, especially for Hawaii. It's never been done before. In California, with the sardines and some other places with tuna, they've used the aerial surveys. But one, we want to see if it's a viable method to try and estimate. And two, there can be a lot of bias with the catch pre-net effort based models. Sometimes, if you have a whole school and you hit that school, your catch pre-net effort is about the same, even if you hit them all. So it's not
interesting.
It might not be representative of what's actually happening. So maybe this is a better way.
You know, that being said, once again, going back to what he's talking about, on the West Coast, those of you that have been around when we've done the long-range fishing segments with guys like from the Polaris and the others that go down in a Baja and, you know, in Mexico to catch, you know, tuna, is they use, you've heard this, we're buying two scoops. People here just don't relate to that. You guys in California know it.
Yeah.
They'll go out and they'll actually surround this school and keep it there literally for days.
Yeah.
And boats that need bait go by and buy a few scoops.
Right.
And it's just it's a commodity.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that method of assessment valuable for aerial for those catches? Because a lot of those aren't just for bait for catching tuna. They're for food.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the fish, but yeah, it definitely can be.
Sardines,
yeah, especially.
Yeah. In any case, so the project that is running now runs for how long?
Right now, we started on the opening in November for the season. So it'll be going on through the season and hopefully in the many years to come because the methods are so different. You can't exactly compare the results. You need to be able to compare the time series and the pattern.
Where does this data get to after it's gathered by you guys in the field?
Right.
You come back and actually walk us through the assembly line of what happens next.
I'm working with the pilot and the fisherman to help them gather the data efficiently and accurately.
Can you see sometimes these guys being able to do that unsupervised?
Yeah.
That's
in the beginning, I was much more hands-on, but now it's them getting the data, and I'm just kind of keeping track of it and making sure everything's running.
I mean, do you feed it into a blender and hit on and see what comes out, or what do you do with the information?
Right now, it's all in a spreadsheet. I still have to analyze it. Mm-hmm. Also, with the maps, we're using GIS to map all the tracks. The goal is to make an index of apparent abundance. So we're going to use the time searched in each quadrat or coastline.
I do know, John, that there are some people that are a little bit worried because every time there's an assessment going on or some way of gathering information, they feel that it might threaten the fishery, that it might create regulations providing it. It should be pretty obvious to almost all the scientists involved that this is a replenishing fish. It's,
right.
Like you said earlier, it rapidly becomes sexually mature.
Right.
They can make lots of little babies right away, and we don't seem to be. What do you hear anecdotally from the pilots and from the fishermen about the ease of finding and catching them?
It depends on the day. Usually they have pretty decent days.
Yeah.
And last year and this year has been really good years, so I don't. My hypothesis would be that it's stable.
Is there anything besides us that threaten the fish? I mean, you know, it's obviously they're a food fish and they're part of the food chain. But, I mean, are they prone to any disease? Are they like pelagics? They're pretty much okay. They don't get too many diseases. What is the Akuli?
Yeah, they're pretty resilient. I haven't heard of any major diseases with Akuli. I mean, it's mainly predators and they just reproduce so fast, I mean.
You know, one thing is that I remember that some of the charter boats would love to buy from the Akuli fishermen live fish, you know, and Opelo and Akuli. And Akuli was preferred because they seem to be a little hardier in the bait box.
Okay.
Swimming around and not banging themselves up too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, is that even a mini part of this fishery, or are we pretty much eating all the Akuli we catch?
As far as I know, we eat them.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I don't know all the ins and outs of all the fishing endeavors.
You know, there are people that want to compare them to Sama and Saba. And you see sometimes these bait fish that are frozen that people use for chum or for palu.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, that's what you use for catching mai mai, chop up a bunch of Akuli and do that. Who are some of the outside of the markets that suck up these things? Who are some of the other users?
I mean, definitely you get the people just who want to eat them. Bait fish, people cut it up using as bait.
But gang, it's a little tougher to catch a coolie than you think. You can't sneak up on them and spear them. You can't get them with a scoop net.
Yeah, there are people who handline for them as well.
So yeah, and you know, and that's pretty good. I mean,
yeah,
I know guys.
A big part of the commercial fishery.
Yeah, the
actually.
Damashi guys are unbelievable. They go out and they catch a four banger, a five banger. They catch the right place. They catch a lot. But what is that part of? First of all, generally speaking, in what water are they found? What's the most popular depth?
They don't really go offshore. Mm-hmm. Some of the tag recapture studies, they pretty much stay around the area that they originated from.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early morning, they school up for protection. They usually feed at night. So, I mean, in depths less than 100 meters.
What is their chosen menu? What do they like to eat?
Basically anything smaller than them.
Watch out, little small fish.
Anything like small crabs in the plankton.
But you know what, John? There must be a lot of food source because there's a lot of
aquarium. There's a lot of food.
Okay, so now one thing that we've all seen, there's been some really great photographs taken of both a coolie and a opelu when they part the seas to let a predator through. Are large predators the big issue, or what besides the obvious sharks and stuff, what eats a coolie?
Mainly like billfish and tunas and trevallies and stuff like that.
And trevallies, what he's talking about is the omilu and the ulua. They have a voracious appetite for them.
Right.
It's their choice. Are you sometimes, as a scientist, amazed to see that, wow, these guys are getting attacked from all sides, yet there's plenty of them?
It is amazing how fast they can regenerate.
Okay, at the end of the day, when this information, like you said, is compiled and put in your spreadsheets, what's the next step up the food chain? Because I do know that National Fisheries, everybody's interested in the results of this project. What it's going to glean? What information you're going to be able to provide?
So, like I said earlier, the goal is to have a longer time series so we can get patterns and year to year. But the Science Center is hopefully going to be using some of this data to do another stock assessment here coming up in the next few years.
When you talk about that, we've learned a little bit. Those of you that have come to the Fishers Forums, and I think there's one coming up in March that you want to, as soon as I find out the dates, I'm going to make sure you set it aside. Talk about bottom-up management. That's where I've originally saw John, at one of those things. And I'm totally impressed at people that will take time out to come and see what's going on. Because guys like in your business, they're not trying to prevent people from eating or catching fish, right?
No, not at all. And I think that's a big misconception. Yeah. We're just trying to figure out what's going on, see what needs to happen.
Where would we be if it weren't for people seeing down the road to justify the expense and funding these kind of projects?
Well, I think we saw it. There's been countless fisheries that have collapsed, and we just don't want that to happen anymore. We're not trying to take away a livelihood, but in the long term.
I'm not sure that we're creating any new akuli eaters outside of kids that eat them. In other words,
I mean, I never had them before this project, and I liked them.
Yeah.
Little pan fry.
Yeah, some. Yeah. No, garlic. There's no question that they're a really good part of the diet, and I do know that there, in certain ethnicities, eating the whole fish is not a problem.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have a problem with poke akuli because it's very, very bony, and you have to have the ability to eat that way and eat around the bones. But most of us, I think, you pan fry them and you take a chopstick and you separate or you very carefully take that backbone out of there, right?
Yeah.
So that you get mostly the meat.
Yeah.
So far, though, there's very few, I guess, that are served in restaurants. I guess maybe that's
I haven't seen it, but they're all over the markets.
Yeah, and that means that it's people like you know, buyers taking them home. Generally speaking, when the survey is done on any given day, how many hours are these pilots in the air? Is it usually a morning deal?
Typically in the morning. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he'll go out in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's largely dependent on the weather. Usually he's up for about a couple hours to do the whole island.
When it's windy,
isn't
it really difficult to see through that, the chop?
It is, and that's one of the things that we're looking at on this go-around is some of the environmental stuff, so we're recording more things to see if that's an influence. But
What adds to the information flow, putting the aerial effort into it? I mean, obviously, before it was off the back of the boat assessing what all these commercial guys caught, which didn't take into account a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess when you're flying, you also have a chance to look at who's out there catching them and what equipment, what are they using?
I haven't even thought about that, I mean, we could.
But I mean,
a few people in the fishery, though, at least around Oahu.
Yeah, it seems to me, and some of you know the akuli guys, these are the guys that are at the boat ramp early in the morning, and they're there sometimes until dark. I'm, you know, as somebody that's done a fair bit of this back in the day, I can tell you that it is a really tough business.
There's
not
hard.
A lot of Mercedes out in the back of the, but isn't it also amazing that what keeps a lot of them going is the demand. They know that if they go out and catch them, somebody's going to eat them.
Yeah, there is a lot of demand.
What do the pilots tell you? Now you've had a chance to fly with these guys. How do they learn to do that?
I mean, he was just a pilot for a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he told me exactly how he got into it, but it's just a lot of experience.
Yeah,
you know?
I used to think it was passed from father to son, but that's not the case. Most of the time you get a guy that maybe was a military pilot or an airline pilot or is a young pilot or just always wanted to fly and never thought that they'd be flying looking at fish.
Yeah, he was a pilot long before doing this. Yeah, so. Yeah.
And thank goodness for those guys. Does it give you sort of an appreciation of what these guys go through every day just to do their thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the last time I was up with them, like you were saying with the wind, it was like 20-knot winds and 30-knot gusts. So you're kind of flying on a line. And
how's
then
that little bag? You know, you're gonna get that ready.
Yeah, on a line, and then all of a sudden you're over here.
Yeah, for those that don't know, John, how high up do they usually I already know, and I've talked about this a little bit before, but they need to get to a pretty low altitude to get this job done.
Yeah, it's usually around 1,000 feet or so.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you got to look at fish. Yeah. You got to look around you.
You got to be, your head's on a swivel. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then when Obama came, we got shut down.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, there were a lot of people that realized, wow, there's a lot of people that can't use the water. But a lot of these guys,
there's a lot of air traffic.
Planes and the air traffic that had to stop.
Yeah.
Okay, I still want to get back to where people really know. At the end of the day, when this information is compiled, what your anticipated end user is, and what are they going to be able to use the information for?
I mean, the users for the science in itself is just to see how the stock is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a kind of a, just the method goal is to see if it's a viable method that we can use in the future. Even for other species.
Yeah, I was going to say, what other species could we include in this? Because I do know that every now and again, other fish school up as well. Mm-hmm. But I do know that there's always people that have looked at the goldfish and that looked at some of the other fish that are caught in, you know, with nets in schools, that this science would certainly be valuable for them.
It's definitely a possibility if we can show that this is viable. Then
where can people take a look at what's going on? Yeah, is there if they go to wpconsult.org, can they look for a Cooley project? Can they find out more stuff?
Right now, it's still pretty early for all the results anyway. I did a technical report for the pilot project, so that might be up. I have to check to see if that's online.
I think that one of the things you alluded to a little bit, and I want to make sure that we reiterate that there are certain things that are very valuable to any fishery, and this project seems to be one of them, because I don't think that a tourist getting off a plane has no idea how many of these little fish we eat.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They're not going to see them on the buffet at the hotel, and they're not even going to see them usually at a luau or anything, because you have to know what you're doing to eat a coolie.
Yeah, it's true.
And is the method of choice, of course, is in that frying pan.
Oh, for me.
What's next for it? I mean, you said that it's funded at this point through what time about or through when?
Through November.
Through,
we're hoping to get, like I said, more financing to keep it a longer time series.
Knock on wood, you guys, if you ever hear of a way to influence that financing. Real quickly, make sure people understand about the season and the sizes. There's a season and time that which you cannot catch hullaloo.
Right.
As a matter of fact, you pretty much cannot catch hullaloo anyways.
Yeah,
anymore,
there's
right?
With the net restriction, you're not going to catch them in that.
The best way you're going to catch hullaloo is with a dunker or catch a few on the bottom. But what is the season that you're looking at?
July through October is closed.
Yeah.
And then it starts up November 1st.
Yep.
Gets hit pretty hard that day.
Hey, well, listen, I want to thank you for coming down and hanging out with us today. How much longer, if personally, are you going to be involved in this project that you know of?
Well, I'm contracted through November for this year. If it goes on past that, we'll see.
Okay. I hope we do see. That's going to wind it up for this time. We hope that you've gotten a little something out of it. Remember, if there's something you want to hear on the program, it's pretty simple. All you got to do is big us. The Mike Buck Show at AOL.com. And we're also changing to a new one, The Mike Buck Show at gmail.com. And if you want to find out more about this or any other project involved with the council, go to wpconsult.org. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Go Fish.